Remote learning, how's it going? Last week, Education Commissioner Pender Macon made the announcement that many feared but also expected. Maine schools were told to prepare to stay closed for the rest of the school year. Teachers, parents, and students have been doing their very best to adjust to their new reality. In most cases, it means online classes. But for others, it might look like old-fashioned packets of schoolwork, which parents are trying to supervise. Spring sports are canceled. High school seniors are missing milestone events, such as prom. It's hard, but there are also some glimmers of a silver lining. After all, teachers have never been more appreciated. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we check in on K-12 education in Maine during this pandemic. Maine Calling is next. But first, this news. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. All across the state, kids are discovering that they actually miss going to school. Unfortunately for them and their teachers and parents, the plan now is for Maine students to be learning from home for the rest of the school year. Today, we'll discuss the shift in plans and how remote learning is going for all involved. Joining me, Pender Macon, who is Commissioner of Maine's Department of Education, and John Doty, Curriculum Director at RSU 34, which serves the towns of Alton, Bradley, and Old Town. He's also a board member for the Maine Curriculum Leaders Association. Thank you both for joining us on Maine Calling today.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
As always, we want to hear from you in the audience. Are you juggling homeschooling your kids while working from home? Do you have examples of how online learning has worked well or not so well? You can send an email, a brief email, please, to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Commissioner Macon, I'll start with you. It was 1 week ago, though it seems a lot longer, that you made the decision to recommend that Maine schools remain closed for the rest of the year. How did you come to that recommendation?
Well, I would first appreciate the opportunity to be very clear with our language, because we're trying hard not to say that we closed schools for the rest of the year, but rather we would be maintaining the remote educational practices, because our schools are actually providing as much as they possibly can in terms of educational continuity, student nutrition. In fact, more meals are served every day in our schools now than ever were before. And we're also providing social, emotional, and other supports for families. So the schools aren't technically closed. They are just unable to provide in-person group instruction during this emergency. And how I came to the decision, is because we have been asking the CDC every day. I'm in daily briefings with CDC. I am in almost daily conversation with other commissioners across the country, some of whom are 4 to 6 weeks ahead of us in terms of the curve of this trajectory of the virus's progression. And so far, nobody is able to identify what would be the metrics or the community health benchmarks that would let us know that we're safe to be returning to full group instruction. And since we haven't identified what those markers are yet, even in places that are far ahead of us on the timeline, it tells me that we're certainly a ways out before we're going to be able to just move students back into the classroom. We recommended that districts would expand their planning from what had been 2 weeks to just after April vacation. So they were planning in little fits and starts, two-week chunks of time. And the message and I think even the emotional toll for educators was kind of, well, I can get through these 2 weeks or these next 2 weeks. But when you're really looking at a much longer period of time, I think you adjust your pacing of planning and instruction. You maybe begin to embrace more different modalities of providing for your students. And even for such pragmatic reasons as a superintendent, wondering, should I order these tablets to help get kids connected if they're backlogged for 3 weeks? Probably not, because we'll be back by then. So the myth or the information that we were holding for just 2 weeks or just a month, a short period of time, was inhibiting the best possible provision of educational services. And so that's why we made that announcement, knowing that it certainly will be several weeks, if not months.
Commissioner Pender-Macon from the Maine Department of Education, I need to note right now that the newsroom at Maine Public Radio is covering a breaking news event, which is a apparent mill explosion in Jay. So I will let you know that as soon as we have more information, we'll be cutting into Maine Calling with anything we know. Also, if you live in that area, if you're listening now and you know something, feel free to call our number as well, which is 1-800-399-3566. Already living in highly unusual times, and now this news about an explosion. So back to the conversation, though, about school and remote learning. Commissioner Macon, it's been a month now since schools closed around Maine. How do you think the physical buildings, the facilities closed around Maine, but how do you think the remote education is going? What are you hearing from parents, teachers, superintendents, students?
So what we're mostly hearing is that it's very challenging for everybody. It's challenging for kids. They so miss their regular interactions with their peers and their teachers. It's unspeakably difficult for parents, many of whom are also trying to work from home and sharing one device, if they even have the technology to support the different activities they're trying to do for their work and for managing their children's education. And I know that we have an extremely inequitable, uneven distribution of resources across our state. Even in there are many regions in our state where broadband is not accessible to anybody for any price. And then we have parts of the state where there's plenty of broadband capability and there are family homes that don't have the financial capacity to have the internet services that are needed for online learning. So teachers are having to often do double duty. They're creating an online lesson, a Google Classroom, or a Zoom activity, and they're having to reproduce in hard copy packets that are delivered or mailed home for children who aren't able to engage. And none of these methods, let me just start by saying, nothing that we're doing right now yet can equal the experience of a regular school day. If we were not in an emergency situation, students would be receiving a far more robust and wonderful experience. And we are, unfortunately, like the rest of our state and like the rest of our nation and most of the globe, we're in an actual emergency. And it's important for us to zoom out from time to time and think, look, we're doing amazing work. It's very difficult. And I have heard also just accolades beyond what I could ever express for the hardworking, dedicated people who go in every day to work in the kitchens of our schools and produce hundreds of that. I mean, by now we've surpassed 100,000 meals for certain that have been provided to all children ages like birth through 18. Are being fed through our school kitchens in addition to what's happening with educators.
John Doty, I want to bring you into the conversation. Yeah, go ahead. Tell me how it's going for you.
Well, I was going to say I would echo everything that Commissioner Macon just said. I use our own family as an example quite frequently. We have a first grader and a toddler and two professional educators in the house. We happen to have a place with good internet connection. We have devices. We have food in the fridge. We have toilet paper on the roll. And we are still finding it really hard to do this, to work full-time and educate, you know, provide as much as we can of that first grade experience at home. And so I think that's easing when we say that to families, when we're talking people through this to say, look, we do this professionally and we find it really hard, you know. And for other folks who are just dipping their toes into the water of educating their children and so on in that way, it's super hard, especially if they have any of those other barriers. On the meals, it's absolutely amazing what our food service folks have done around the state. I happen to have on the sticky note in front of me, last week we served 11,942 meals distributed by school bus. and at a couple of pickup locations, and they're all lined up in the hallway right now this afternoon getting ready for tomorrow's bus distribution.
Let me ask you, John, for some advice. You know, all you have to do is go on social media and see parents expressing, one, their admiration, even increased admiration for their own kids' teachers, but also their exasperation with trying to maintain some sort of schedule, trying to get kids to focus. What is your advice to parents who are doing their best, but really kind of at their wits' end?
I've been there too a lot the last several weeks, and like I said, I'm a professional educator. You know, there have been tears at our house with a six-year-old, and so on as we do this. I think to take it in little steps, recognize when breaks are needed, try to let the kids take the lead and give them as much responsibility as they can take on. Recognize that it's not going to be as good as what would have happened in a normal school day, and so on, and despite anybody's best efforts. And just do what you can as well as you can. One of the principles we identified really early on in this, as we were doing our planning as a school system, was that perfect is the enemy of good. And we know it's not going to be perfect. We're just going to do good. We're going to do as best we can and make it through every day and every action and adjust plans as we need to going forward.
All right. Well, joining us now on the line is Matt Haney. He is principal at Mount Desert Island High School, or Mount Desert Island High School, MDI. What do you say, Matt?
Well, I say, first of all, thanks for thanks for having me on, and thanks for taking the time to talk about this important topic.
Right. You're also president of the Maine Principals Association. So what are you hearing from staff and students about their experiences?
We're hearing that there's just a really, above all else, the importance of what we're doing right now is the maintaining relationships. What teachers do and what we do as educators more than anything else is we build those relationships with students and with each other. And we did that, as we always do, at the beginning of the year and through the year, and we had no idea how important that was going to be when all of a sudden our personal connections were removed and we had to keep those relationships going through a computer or through whatever forms of learning people are doing remotely. And it's really obvious how much that means to us and to the students. And that's what we're trying to maintain.
Let me ask you, Matt, how you're doing your job. Are you, like so many people, working from home, trying to stay in touch with your teachers, your parents, your students from a home office?
I am. My home office is in my bedroom right now. I was able to get into the school and bring my desk and my chair and my computer and stick them in my bedroom, and which is not ideal, but it's probably something lots of people can empathize with. But as far as keeping in touch, it's a constant process. I'm trying to communicate to families relatively frequently without inundating them. I'm communicating with teachers in a different way than I usually do. Usually it's a lot of principals will understand this. It's a lot of walking around the building and just answering the question, hey, have you got a second, about 50 to 100 times a day. I can't do that now. So what's happening is all those are in emails, which is certainly not the same kind of contact. So I'm spending a lot more time looking at a screen and a lot less time talking to people in person. But we're getting through. You know, we're getting through because we do have those relationships.
Well, Matt, I really appreciate you calling in. Matt Haney, principal at Mount Desert Island High School, president of the Maine Principals Association. And I have to say, Matt, our sound engineer, Lucy Suchek, is especially excited to hear from you today.
Oh, it's great to hear that. I hope Lucy's doing well. She's a proud MDI grad.
I'm sure she is. We are so lucky to have her on Maine Calling. Thanks so much for calling in today. And that's Matt Haney from MDI. We're going to go to Sarah, who's calling from Carabasset Valley Academy. Hi, Sarah. Go ahead.
Hi there. Hi, this is Sarah.
Yeah, go ahead.
So speaking as wearing two hats today, I am the parent of a eighth grader who's doing remote learning, and I'm also the marketing director for Carabasset Valley Academy. So I can kind of speak to both sides of the view. So, first, as a parent, my eighth grader, Carabasset Valley Academy has for years had Chromebooks. the students are really well versed in traveling on the road, doing schoolwork while they're traveling, because quite often they'll travel to, you know, ski races or snowboard competitions in another state or another country. So online learning was something that kind of came seamless. The part that CVA added in March, as the when the kids were sent home, was athletic training. So my son has been doing body weight exercises from his bedroom and meeting with his coaches online every day, Monday through Friday, which is good. And he does okay with it, right? But misses his friends, misses his coaches, misses his teachers tremendously from seeing them in person.
Well, Sarah, thanks for calling in and joining the conversation from Carabasset Valley Academy. Commissioner Macon, I wanted to ask you, are there certain ages for which remote learning works more readily with younger kids versus older kids?
Well, of course, the older kids have a lot more savvy, have in most main schools received digital citizenship and the critical thinking skills around judging what content is from a reliable source and what is not. And as, of course, the age range is younger, we would have concerns without a parent to help them navigate and to utilize the technology for certain. And I think in many cases, having technology in the hands of a family member of a younger kid can at least provide that, you know, daily connection, as was mentioned by Matt and John also. I mean, the connections and relationships that create the underpinning of everything that's done in public education here in Maine, those are the pieces that are very hard to lose for everybody, that connectedness. Their brains, the children are going to continue to learn, and I know that there's a lot of concern that they're not going to get the fourth quarter content into their heads, as though the knowledge and information is in the head of the teacher and it has to be poured out quarter by quarter into the minds of the children. But it's really the thinking skills, the connectedness, the relationships, and the sense of themselves as learners who are curious and problem-solving kids. I just went off that, but yeah, I'd say, of course, it's much easier for the older kids to make safe and efficient use of their technology.
We're going to take a quick break. We're talking about remote learning and how K through 12 in Maine is completely different now because of the coronavirus pandemic. If you have a story to share or a question for the commissioner, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from New England Cancer Specialists. Proud to support the healthcare workers who are keeping people safe at this critical time, and Maine Public for keeping Mainers informed. And Woodford F&B in Portland, now offering curbside pickup 7 days a week from 3 to 8 p.m. Menu at woodfordfb.com. Trusted news, quality entertainment, and lifelong learning is what Maine Public Television is all about, four channels strong. And now there's more daytime educational fare, from science to nature to history programming, for the older kids who find themselves at home this spring. We have the PBS Kids channel for preschool kids, but our main channel now has more afternoon programming for older learners, starting at 1 o'clock each afternoon. And the Maine Public World channel is offering the same each weekday afternoon from 12 to 5. Television programming that is worthwhile and educational to watch. See the schedule for our Maine HD and World channels at mainepublic.org. Click on the television drop-down. There's a wonderful world of learning alive and well, great for making good use of time at home for students of all ages at mainepublic.org. It's called PBS Learning Media, and the offerings are diverse and interesting. For example, this week we are celebrating Public Radio Music Day, officially this Thursday. One segment from Soundbreaking is of note. It's the story of how Paul McCartney and John Lennon's song Yesterday was made into a record by George Martin. PBS Learning Media is a free, on-demand, online media service for grades K through 12 and curious adults. For more information or to check it out, Go to mainpublic.org and click on the education dropdown.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we are checking in on how K-12 education is going as the school year shifts to remote learning through June. Our guests are John Doty, Curriculum Director for RSU 34, serving Alton, Bradley, and Old Town, and Commissioner Pender Macon with the Department of Education. We invite you to be part of the conversation. Email talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. I want to let you know that Maine Public Broadcasting provides help with remote learning for kids in several ways. Maine Public now offers, of course, the 24/7 PBS Kids channel with educational programming on television, which is available to you whether or not you have high-speed internet, of course. And Maine Public has also partnered with Maine DOE on a new television program called The Learning Space, where classroom teachers will give video lessons to students grades 3 through 6. That program starts later this month. It will air weekdays at 12:30 on Maine Public Television. In just a second, I want to go to Craig Millage, who's a social studies teacher at Mountain Valley Middle School in Mexico, Maine. But first, want to read a statement from Governor Mills about the mill explosion in Jay. She writes, "I'm closely monitoring all information concerning the explosion at the Androscoggin Mill in Jay. Officials with the Department of Public Safety are on scene, along with first responders, and more are on the way. I will be in close contact with public safety officials regarding further developments to direct all necessary state resources. I urge Maine people to stay far away from the scene, to stay safe, and allow first responders to work as quickly as they can. I ask the people of Maine to join me in praying for the safety and well-being of all those in and around this historic mill. In this already difficult moment, let us summon the strength and resilience which has defined us as Maine people throughout our history and which has sustained us and carried us through our most challenging times." We don't have much information on this other than WABI television in Bangor is reporting that all mill workers have been accounted for. So we know that the explosion happened late morning at the former Verso paper mill in Jay. And coincidentally, Craig Millage, a social studies teacher planning to call in today's program, lives nearby. Craig, did you hear the explosion or see it?
I did not hear it, nor did I see it. Certainly know a lot of people that work in the mill that we're all concerned about here in the area, but I don't really know much more than any of you guys at this point. So.
All right. Well, strange to be going back and forth between two really important stories. The really important story that we planned for today, though, and the reason you're calling in is that you're an eighth grade social studies teacher. Eighth grade is already a challenging grade to teach. How is it going for you?
No, I think it's going really well. I think for all of us, not just at our school, but everywhere, the first couple of weeks were really a struggle. You know, first of all, making sure that students were safe and they were taken care of and fed, but then also making sure that they had access to online resources, our online learning. And if they didn't, making sure that we provided them with hard copies and other resources so that they could continue their learning from home. So first couple of weeks were tough and struggle, but I think we've all gotten into a rhythm and things are going pretty well now.
What would you tell the parents in terms of their role? Any do's and don'ts?
I would tell parents to encourage their children, their students, to email their teachers with questions as often as possible. I think one of the bright spots, the silver linings to online learning, is that students are more apt to contact us via electronically with questions they might have, where they might not have spoken up in the classroom. You know, so you tend to have students that dominate the classroom conversation, and with this online learning, all students are comfortable getting a hold of me, getting a hold of their other teachers, and asking questions and clarifying things they might not understand. So I would encourage parents to help when they can, certainly, you know, if they can. And then if they can't, to again, encourage their kids to get a hold of their teachers as often as possible, because I know the teachers everywhere are much like us, and that they're here for their students as much as they would be in the classroom. So ask questions, seek out help, and don't be worried about how often you do it.
And Craig, would you say that you're putting in a lot more hours trying to figure out how to teach under this emergency situation?
No, I wouldn't say a lot more. I would say pretty much the same as far as when I was in the classroom. It looks a lot different. You know, responding to student work, giving them feedback takes a lot longer because you're not right there with them, you know, to kind of just say offhand, you know, here's how you can improve. That becomes a process where you're videoing yourself or you're writing down through Google Classroom or whatever things that they can do differently or what they're doing well. So the student feedback piece is taking a lot longer than it did in the classroom. A lot of professional development is going on across the state. I know that. I work with Joe Schmidt, who is the social studies specialist through the Maine DOE. I would say that he's putting in a lot more time than most people. But I access his weekly or daily, actually, his daily office hours with questions and answers on how to alleviate student concerns and better our teaching remotely. Professional development, staff meetings are all online. So those are continuing. And actually, as we speak, my eighth grade team of teachers is meeting with our eighth grade students via Zoom, as we do every week, to answer their questions and just touch base and let them know that we're still there for them. So some things are taking longer, others not so much, but top to bottom overall, it's roughly the same.
Craig, thanks so much for calling in. That's Craig Millage. He teaches social studies at Mountain Valley Middle School in Mexico, Maine. I'm going to go to Michelle, who's calling from Georgetown. Hi, Michelle. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you for taking my call. And thank you to the commissioner and the other person on your panel today. I think education in the state and in the country, as everybody knows, is upside down right now. And I think one of the sort of bright shining stars from this whole experience is I do feel that peace from my kiddos, teachers, to administrators, that everybody's doing the best they can, that everybody is trying their hardest to adapt to this new world. But I want to specifically talk about my daughter's school, Acacisco, down in Cape Elizabeth. And as I said to the woman who answered my call first, I really applaud all the staff at Acacisco because they got the school up and running the week that everything went to online learning. So that was St. Patty's week, and my daughter was in school that Wednesday from 8:30 to 3, and they've been keeping that schedule ever since. So I just really want to applaud them and all the other teachers and supporters out there. And
Michelle,
as well, I kind of want to, yeah.
Go ahead quickly. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to sort of underscore what the commissioner said, too, that I don't turn a blind eye or, you know, I feel lucky and privileged that we have all the positivity that we have going on with my kiddos. But I don't want to not say that this does expose all the inequities and lack of access that so many families are enduring right now, too. So that's important for me to say as well. Thanks, Jennifer.
Michelle, thanks a lot for your call. And we're going to go to an email from Gordon. Some schools, given their lack of usable technology at the elementary level, are treating the fourth quarter as a review of previous material. This is also due to the inability to adequately serve special needs students. How is this review go forward issue being handled in some schools? I'm concerned with issues of equity. Commissioner Macon, especially challenged for kids who have some special needs.
Well, yes, absolutely. And I would say any catastrophe like this, a full disruption of society and certainly of our school systems and our traditional ways of doing things, in such a situation, it is always the most vulnerable populations who receive a disproportionate impact, a negative impact from something like this. There are kids whose plans are so very carefully crafted and they're routines have been upended, and we can't understate, you know, how challenging this is for everybody, but especially those who have disabilities. I would like to, you know, for the record, say that our teachers and school leaders are encouraged to do all they can for everyone they can and to try to make everything as accessible to all students as they possibly can. But we never want our pursuit of equity to pull down in a downward direction. In other words, we want everyone to move forward as far as they can and not to be holding back because maybe not everybody can, but to instead find those supports that are needed or that could be helpful to move every child along.
Are there any plans for non-traditional or non-usual instruction during summer months, especially for students who may need a little more care and support before going back to school in the fall?
So, yes, school districts have summer programs. They have extended school year programs targeting the special needs of students who have disabilities. And they also have remediation style. And I'm sure John could talk to some of the cool models that exist out there for summer learning. But I also would say we're going to be very innovative going forward, even into the fall.
Yep. Well, one of the models that we've used for must be at least 6 or 7 years now is called virtual summer school, and we've used that with grades 3 through 5. And that's kind of a combination of in-person and remote learning that we've been doing already. And so that was a great thing for us to already have in our tool belt that we could implement and scale up as we address this challenge. We know that we're going to need to do a heck of a lot of backtracking and work over the summer and work in the fall to figure out where kids are and address those needs, whether they have special needs or not. One of those big unknowns still as we plan ahead for that is whether or not we'll be able to do that in person or be attempting to do that remotely. Swinging back to the caller about or the email about grades, elementary grades and so on, one of the approaches that we borrowed from one of our colleagues in Maine Curriculum Leaders Association, it's been working really well for our school district, is to do a bingo board format. And so we have 25 activities for kindergarten each week, 25 for first grade, 25 for second grade, and so on. Some of those rows are required. You know, the math row is required, so we're doing new learning. We're progressing with that curriculum there that just like we would in school. Reading and writing is a required row, and so on. And then we challenge kids to earn at least one more bingo so they can pick and choose from the remaining squares. But lots of kids are doing a lot more. You know, some of them are trying to fill in that whole board, and so depending on their circumstances and their support and so on, they can do a lot more and keep learning quite a bit. And so we're trying to be flexible. We're trying not to punish kids for their circumstances, but we're also trying to keep as high a level of engagement and rigor and support as we can.
On the line with us now, Lucas Napton, a senior at Westbrook High School, president of the class of 2020. Hi, Lucas. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. You know, I'm glad to share my experiences as a senior going through these tough times.
Most of the students I know are not too wild about online learning. What has it been like for you?
Yeah, it's definitely not ideal. I'm not a fan of it. You know, obviously as a senior, you know, getting towards the end of the year anyway, you know, starting to get a little more lack of motivation. So it's definitely harder to motivate myself to do the work. But
you had senioritis anyways.
Oh, yeah. Getting into it, I was starting to get a little bit more as we're getting towards the end of the year, but definitely with online classes, you know, not with your friends in class, you know, for the last few months of school is tough.
Yeah, I'm wondering how you and your classmates are doing. I mean, there's some, you know, spring sports have been canceled. I'm guessing prom has either been canceled or postponed. Is everyone holding up okay?
As of now, yeah, I mean, prom has been postponed as of now, so it's definitely tough news, but we're just trying to get through it right now. It's obviously sad, you know, missing out the last few months of your senior year, you know, but, you know, there's not much we can do about it, so we're hanging in there, and we're trying to all stay connected. I know my friends and I are staying connected, you know, virtually and whatnot, so trying to do everything we can to just get through this together.
Commissioner Makin, before we let Lucas go, is there anything you'd like to ask him?
Well, you know, I would like to just say thank you, Lucas, for reaching out to your friends and for trying to stay positive. This is unprecedented, and I would want you to know and remember that you and your graduating class are going to join 3.8 million other seniors this year across our nation as one giant graduating class with a profound collective experience. And I feel like people will remember your graduation far more than they will any other. And it's going to be very special, even though it must be an incredibly challenging thing for you all to have lost those happy, expected senior spring things.
Mm. Yes, for sure.
Lucas, thanks so much for calling in. That's Lucas Napton, the president of his class in his senior year at Westbrook High School. And we are going to go to another quick break. When we come back, more of your questions and comments. We're talking about remote learning in the age of COVID-19. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling. With help from Coveside Healthcare Coverage Options, whose founder, Caroline Irwin, specializes in helping Mainers transition into Medicare. CoveSideLLC.com. And Breakwater in Portland, offering summer day camp programs for kids ages 3 to 18. Registration at enrichment.breakwaterlearning.org. On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
In the early morning hours of April 15, 1912, the Titanic, which had struck an iceberg less than 3 hours before, sank beneath the waters of the North Atlantic. Aboard was Percival and Richard White, a father and son from Brunswick. Percival had purchased tickets for the two of them as a reward for his son's hard work at Bowdoin College. Both men would perish in the sinking, with first-hand accounts telling how they spent their last minutes loading the last survivors into the lifeboats.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of Bernsteinshire and Maine Masons, celebrating their bicentennial in Maine. Happy birthday, Maine!
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today we're checking in on how K-12 education is going for students, parents, teachers, and staff. My guest, Maine Department of Education Commissioner Pender Makin and RSU 34 Curriculum Director John Doty. If you'd like to join our conversation, our number 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We've just received word that the latest update from the Maine CDC, from CDC Director Nirav Shah and Governor Janet Mills, that was scheduled for 2 o'clock, has been postponed because of the explosion at the mill in Jay that has been delayed indefinitely. What we know about the explosion at the mill in Jay is that Maine Department of Public Safety spokesperson Steve McCausland says all of the employees there are accounted for. Joining us now is Ben Potvan. He teaches music, band, and chorus to kids grades 3 through 5 at Mass Landing School in Freeport. He is also president of the Maine Music Educators Association. Ben, thanks for calling in.
Thank you for the opportunity to chat with you today.
It must be particularly challenging to teach something as hands-on and collaborative as music when you have to do it remotely. How's it going in your school district and around the state?
Well, as president of the Maine Music Educators Association, it's been great to chat with colleagues. I know that school expectations and directives are all over the map. Some are doing paper packets. Some are only online. But everyone's trying to do the best they can. Music teachers in particular, we're overachievers. So we continue to make attempts to make meaningful connections with our students. As far as working where I am in the elementary realm, Dell Music, I'm posting weekly content to engage our learners. I just finished a beginning trumpet lesson, so I'm be able to connect in real time with my band students. But there are significant challenges for sure.
Tell us about some creative examples you've heard of from around the state.
Well, connecting with via Zoom or Meet is probably the most, for me, meaningful way that we can engage our student learners. They crave our attention and a positive adult in their life. So for some of our students who are being left home alone or with older siblings, being able to check in on our students is really important. I know a lot of specialists have taken on the task of being cheerleaders and calling home and just checking in on our student well-being. So we're all pitching in our best.
All right. Well, Ben, thanks so much for calling in. Ben Potvin, music teacher at Mass Landing School and president of the Maine Music Educators Association. I'm going to go to Matt, who's calling from Union. Hi, Matt. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm the executive director of an educational nonprofit called History Live Northeast. We offer usually in-person history lessons and demonstrations trying to help supplement social studies teachers' curriculums for K through 12. This year, normally this time of year, we'd be very busy traveling through schools throughout Maine and New England. But because of the pandemic, of course, we've had to scale that back to nothing. But we still want to help teachers, educate their students. So we've moved to an online model. We're calling it History Live Online. We have right now, we're partnering with educators, museum professionals, and reenactors all over the world to bring free content for use for parents and educators to help supplement some of their distance learning. It's available on historylivenortheast.org. We're right now focusing mostly on medieval history, but we're adding more content every week, and hopefully we'll be branching off into other eras very soon.
Well, Matt, thanks so much for calling in, and good luck with that. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. Bye.
I'm going to go to a question from Facebook. This is from Patrick. Commissioner Macon, how many Maine schools are taking April vacation week as normally scheduled?
I believe almost all of them. I've heard there are a few schools that are planning to work straight through April vacation in order to free up time at the end of the year for some professional development. But I think I think most are going to plan to take that break in April, let everybody kind of take a deep breath and regroup and let the kids get away from the screens for a bit and have some more unstructured time with family and then resume again.
Diane on Facebook asks, I'm wondering how career technical education educators are delivering content and skill development in their programs. CTE is unique and many programs are a challenge to teach and assess learning online. For example, culinary arts.
I know one example from, I can't tell you which CTE center off the top of my head, but I know one of the 3D printing labs was working with students to design face masks that could be used in the medical community. And we've had an effort like that regionally here also, where we're 3D printing face shields and using our 3D printers that we have in schools. And so I know some of those CTE programs have been able to connect and do some things virtually.
We have an email here from Jay. Since closing its doors, my daughter's school has chosen not to provide remote learning lessons every Monday. As well, the district is observing remaining holidays and spring break. Is this typical across Maine, or should I be worried that my daughter is not receiving adequate supports from her school? Commissioner Macon.
No, I think we're really encouraging schools to follow the same calendar that they would otherwise be following, and so those holidays are reasonably going to be time off for everybody.
And a tweet from Victoria. Thank you to Pender Macon for her compassionate words and gentle leadership during this unprecedented challenge. We are very lucky to have her in the helm in Augusta. So there you go. Some kind words today. We'll go to Christy calling from Portland. Hi, Christy. Go ahead.
Hi. I was calling a little bit about homeschooling. I'm a homeschool mom. And homeschooling is also very different at this time because we typically spend a lot of time with trips to the library, and we meet in our co-op with friends to do science experiments and play music, and we go to museums, and now we're stuck at home. So I just wanted to let everyone know out there who is suddenly homeschooling that this isn't really a good picture of what it looks like.
Thank you, Christy. So noted. We'll go to Mallory, who's calling from Saco. Hi, Mallory. Go ahead.
Hi there. So I have a 4-year-old and an 8-year-old that both attend St. James in Biddeford. And both of my kids log on every day at 9 o'clock via an old computer and my iPad and are, you know, face to face with their teacher every day. My daughter goes from 9 to 1:30 with some breaks, and my son is 9 to 11. And when we were told that St. James was preparing for this, you know, I assumed it did not include my pre-K son, but they have risen above and beyond the challenge here. What we learned in March was they were already planning to do telelearning on snow days. And so what they did is they just accelerated that entire program. They trained their teachers in a week on Zoom, on Google Classroom. They really put in the time. And it has quite honestly been one of the saving graces of this entire sort of crisis that we're living in now, because my kids now have a routine, and they log on and they see their friends, they're face to face. The teachers at St. James, who maybe weren't so technically savvy, put that aside for these kids, and it's been an incredible experience to watch. I feel sort of lucky in that sense that we have this every day, because it's really gotten my children through it. That being said, we still have our challenges. You know, my son, if he's not in it, you know, I work from home, and if he's not in it and I just don't have the energy, we turn it off and it's no big deal and we try again tomorrow. But yeah. I wanted to say, you know, I know that there's teachers around the state right now who've really gone out of their way to make this work, and we are grateful for that.
Mallory, thanks so much for calling. There's some irony here, isn't there, Pender, that we have been asking kids to limit screen time, and now screen time is sort of the savior of this time.
It is ironic. It really is. And it's for now, it's the one window in this time of isolation that all of us have. I mean, there are elderly people. Being alone is for everybody, you know, and disconnected from day-to-day life is extremely difficult. So, yes, it's a saving grace during this time, and I think it's an appropriate instrument for all of us to be embracing right now.
And well, and also, you know, our caller mentioned snow days. Do you think this might have, for some school districts and some private schools, lasting impact in that when there are snow days in the future, the default will be online learning instead of go outside and make a snowman?
I'd like to see both things happen. I think going outside to make a snowman is great. And I think that we might have bridged that old-fashioned practice of having to make snow days up at the far end of the school year. I think we are demonstrating right now, many Maine school districts are demonstrating their readiness and capability to do that. And I think we're going to find many gifts, many new innovations during this time. When we do return to business as usual, I think it'll be business but better. And we're going to have innovative new ways of doing and approaching many things in education.
I think that's absolutely right. There have been an explosion of resources that are available from all sorts of companies and nonprofits that we're getting exposed to and getting a look at right now. The commissioner and her team have been reaching out and doing just a tremendous amount of professional development and sharing of resources and so on. And I know the DOE is looking for opportunity in this crisis, you know, taking a look back at our assessment system and things like that, and how can we make things better that we had to put on pause. And we're trying to do the same things locally when we have a moment to take a breath, is to take a look for opportunities that we can find in this crisis.
We're going to go to Maura calling from Falmouth. Maura, we're near the end of the hour, so if you could be quick, that'd be great.
I will. I think that as a teacher, I'm providing more of a social, emotional wellness support for students and providing resources for parents. And then as a parent, I find it difficult because I know that my daughter has a lot of needs because she has an IEP. So I try to supplement her needs with a guitar lesson with her cousin via Zoom and other things as well. So I think that's helpful in writing out her schedule every day so that she can see it. And I'll take your response off the air. Thank you.
All right, Maura. John, do you have thoughts?
I think just the flexibility of parents and teachers trying to figure out what works best in this circumstance for each student. you know, the predictable schedule works really well for some kids. For some other kids, they might be caregivers for younger siblings or neighbors and so on, and so they might not be available during that typical schedule. I know what educators and families have managed to put together in short order is just absolutely amazing.
Michelle in Waterboro, I'll ask you to also go quickly if you can. Thank you.
Hey, yes. Hi, I'm a part-time teacher at Scarborough High School and Freiburg Academy. I help with the band kids. And shout out to Ben Pott. Ben, he's a good friend of mine. One of the things I have seen come through with one of my students in particular from Freiburg Academy is he put together a video using, I think he used GarageBand and iMovie. And there were four of him on stage. It was like four clones all playing a quintet together. So it's just incredible what they can do because they're so much better versed in these audiovisual programs that they can use.
That's great.
A lot of them for creativity. It was very, very cool to see. And, you know, the teachers are meeting constantly on Zoom two or three times a week, and there's a lot going on.
Michelle, thanks for calling in. And Pender Macon, that brings up a really good point in that this is not a one-way learning experience, is it? I have a feeling some of the students are teaching the teachers now.
Oh, they sure are. I live in a tiny house with my husband, who's a seventh grade math and science teacher, who had to put aside all of his carefully laid plans for the school year. And he has learned before my eyes, Google Classroom. I see him setting up his lessons, offering office hours, and he says the same thing. He's learning just as much, if not more, than the kids are right now. We're all learning together.
This whole thing is a learning experience for all of us. John Doty, last word for you. What are your words of wisdom for the education community out there in Maine?
Well, I guess it's words of wisdom for the kids and the families. You started off the show, Jennifer, by saying that they miss their teachers, and their teachers, their educators miss them too.
Well, thank you both for joining us. That was John Doty, Curriculum Director for RSU 34, which includes Alton, Bradley, and Old Town. He's also a board member for the Maine Curriculum Leaders Association. And also with us, Pender Macon, Commissioner of Maine's Department of Education. Lucy Suchek ran the board today, and Maine Callings program will be rebroadcast at 7 this evening. All the resources mentioned on this program and more, including Maine Public's educational resources, can be found at mainepublic.org and mainecalling.org. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Again, the latest update from the Maine CDC has been postponed due to the explosion at the J Mill. Stay tuned all day to Maine Public Radio because we will be giving updates on that mill explosion. We know that we've been told that all employees are accounted for, but there are likely injuries. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.